You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Screen Heroes, your film and TV podcast on the Heroes Podcast Network. I am your regular host, Derek, and I have with me my two lovely co-hosts, Ryan.
Hi.
And Ray.
Hello.
Hello, hello. And we are here this week for our 25th anniversary review of Stallone's Judge Dredd from 1995. And we are also going to talk some entertainment news. So we'll go ahead and start with the news segment of today's thing. just to kind of get it out of the way, Disney made kind of a big announcement, at least big for COVID times. The Mulan live action remake is going to be released directly to Disney Plus. In order to view it, however, not only will you need Disney Plus, but you will also have to spend $29.99 to rent the film. We've done some polls on this, so I'm going to bring those up here while we're talking to kind of get some opinions. But guys, from your perspectives, how do you feel about this plan?
So I don't think there's anything wrong with it from a business standpoint. They got to make their money back on the movie, and they have been sitting on it for like 7-8 months now. But I also don't feel like it's for me. So I'm going to wait until it's either fully on Disney Plus to see it, or I'll buy the Blu-ray when it comes out. One or the other.
It's kind of a shame because Mulan is probably one of my favorite, maybe my favorite Disney movie. It's right up my alley. You know, lots of martial arts and cool cultural things, but I can't bring myself to spend $30 on it. That's more than I would spend to go to the movie theater with me and a date. So I can't justify that at all. It's definitely seems to be geared more towards families rather than people that are not coexisting with multiple people. So I don't know. I think we're all pretty much on the same page on this one. It's not really an option that either any of us are interested in, I think.
Yeah. And just for some context, it's also, you know, Disney is by far not the first of the production companies to go this kind of route during the pandemic. However, they are the most expensive. So far, the other companies have gone with the $19.99 price point and no other subscription service required. Here, not only do you need Disney Plus, which is on the more affordable side of streaming services, but then it's another $10 more on top of that $19.99 that other companies are spending. So it's not the best look. So I asked on Twitter and in our Facebook group if people were going to rent Mulan at that price tag. So on Twitter, we had 63% said no and 21% said maybe. So that left us with just 16% saying yes. Meanwhile, on the Facebook side of things, this is in our Screen Heroes Facebook group that you can join. Please do. And we talk about lots of cool stuff, including things like this. In this case, we had not like a ton of votes. It was kind of a quick poll here, but 32 said no and 4 said maybe, with nobody saying yes. And we ended up with 55 comments. So a lot of people wanted to talk about it and maybe they hadn't made up their minds quite yet. But I don't think the three of us are in the minority either, at least not with the core groups, that the demographic that listens to this show anyway. So I guess we'll see. I think my take on this, and I'm sure you guys, you know, I assume you guys probably agree with this too, but tell me if you don't, they're going to use this to gauge if they're going to do something similar with Black Widow.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Like both films had a budget, including marketing. Both films had an estimate on their box office haul. And I'm sure they're going to look at Mulan's and say, well, this is how much we brought in on the Disney Plus rentals based on that percentage with Black Widow. Here's what we would anticipate that we make, green light or not. So I guess something could be said about that. And the big difference for me between those two films is like, I know what happens for the most part in Mulan, right? We have, you know, the history, and we also have the animated film to go off of. We also have a big difference between that and Black Widow, because not just spoilers, but I have actually seen every MCU film in theaters, and the idea of missing this one, even release weekend, so to speak, for streaming is something I'm not super excited about doing. So I feel more pressure to pay for Black Widow. I don't know about you guys.
I think if Black Widow was like half the price that Mulan is in, then that'd be a no-brainer for me. I mean, I like the theater experience, but I've never been like so convinced that I have to see something in a theater. I'm a homebody, so if I can watch it at home for $15, I'm okay with that. It's not a movie theater screen, but that's not nearly as important to me as it is to a lot of other people. So, but $30 even for Black Widow is tough. It's more likely than Mulan for me personally, but I mean, that's still a lot of money.
Yeah, I agree. I probably would pull the trigger on Black Widow, but I'm also not going to be too thrilled about it, especially if it turns out being, you know, not what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. You know, realistically, what this is going to do is make a big push towards torrenting.
Yeah.
And people are going to pirate things, you know. It's
that has definitely increased since every network has their own streaming service now.
It makes it hard. I mean, yeah, it's you know, we all wanted to get away from cable packages when, you know, they started doing these streaming services, and then you're back to where everything's a cable package again.
Yeah.
And
the only difference is stuff has a higher budget. That's literally the only difference.
Stuff has a higher budget, yeah, and you get a little more control over specifically what you get, I think.
I mean, do you though? Because like, I feel like in order for me to watch the shows I want, I still basically have to sign up for everything. You know, like I'm missing shows if I don't sign up for their service, right? Like Jason Momoa has a new show on Apple TV Plus that I'm never really going to watch because I'm not signing up for Apple TV Plus. Or, you know, I guess Peacock doesn't really have a lot coming out that's new that I'm interested in. So maybe they're an outlier. You know, but you look at, you know, DC Universe has, you know, was at the time was the only ones with Doom Patrol or Titans. That was the only way you could watch that content, you know. So it is just kind of back to you have to have everything, and it just costs just as much, but at least the stuff is higher production value. I don't know.
I was more talking about in the sense that, like, when you get a cable package, you know, they package a bunch of crap that you don't want in with it. And in this case, at least if you get DCU, then you're getting DC content, and that's what you want, right? That's the reason you get it. You don't have, you know, ESPN and, you know, a movie channel tossed in all. So it's just, you know, you get that. And so the price point tends to be a little lower, I think, because of that. But yeah, it's stupid and it's really annoying. I mean, I get what Disney is doing, but I'm not choosing not to support that in that way. And they do track torrents and things like that too. So, I mean, they track the number of people pirating these things. So, you know, they're going to see exactly what's happening. That's my prediction, is that it's going to be a very, especially on Black Widow, if they do it at the same price, it's going to be a very, very high percentage that's illegally acquired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I mean, I love the theater experience too. You know, especially some of the really nice options that we have out here, the Dolby screens, the electric recliners, it's all pretty amazing. I don't even have any kind of surround sound in my house, let alone Dolby. But I will say this, I don't have to worry about whether or not to say something to the person down the aisle who won't keep their phone off.
That's a huge plus.
So I guess.
And if you want to talk to the person you're with, you can, you know, mm-hmm. without worrying about it, or you can check your cell phone.
Yeah, Derek actually appreciates my commentary a lot more at home than he does in the theater. I get dirty looks in the theater, and I, like, here I get, like, begrudging chuckles, so.
You can't pause the theater, all right? And I don't want to ruin our experience or anybody else's, for that matter, because, look, theaters are expensive. They are. That's just the way it is, and at home, I can pause it. I can roll it back. Even if it's a rental like this, we at least have some mm-hmm. flexibility there. So I'm much more willing.
That when you go to the theater, it's not just the movie that you're paying for. It's the entire experience from the moment you step in to the moment you leave. So there is something kind of special about it. Talking and disrupting things is not okay usually.
Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, thinking about these experiences and the price point and everything, it's kind of tough because, you know, Dolby might be like $15 a person, depending on where you live. But it's a massive screen with incredible quality, incredible sound, great seats. We have a non-reclining couch with an 8-year-old TV that's not 4K with no external speakers hooked up. Well, that's not true. We have a sound bar, you know, and so like, it's not the same experience. I don't want to pay the same amount for those two experiences. You know what I mean? Does that make, I know you guys agree. So I don't know what that price point would need to be. Like I'm told, like I'm probably going to spend the $19.99 to watch Bill and Ted Face the Music because I like those movies and I'm looking forward to seeing it. But
I feel like I'd have to love those movies to spend that price point. I mean,
yeah,
Bill and Ted is not one that I'm like the, even Black Widow and Wonder Woman are, you know, if Wonder Woman did the same thing, I would still have a hard time with $20. And I like those more than I like Bill and Ted. So
I'm not excited about it by any means. And maybe it's because we've had this drought of movies that we've been able to see that I feel a little more interested to do that for some of these. Cause I mean, the last new movie I saw was Birds of Prey back in February when, you know, the three of us seen new movies like a couple times a month, most of the time. So, but that's that. Anything else you guys want to add to that topic?
No, I think we hit it all.
Before we move on to the next topic though, I do want to bring it up that I found my Insaniac toy. You guys can see it. It fell down right off of Castle Grayskull in the back there. Nice. Right before the show started. So I wasn't lying that I have my original Insaniac from Small Soldiers.
I believe
if you're listening, these are the kind of things you miss not watching the live stream.
That's right. Yeah, we live stream this in our Facebook group every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, facebook.com/groups/screenheroes. And I'm jealous because I love Small Soldiers. All right. Next topic on the list. Let's talk Ninja Turtles. So what is this? We're getting another Ninja Turtles reboot. Is this live action? Is it animated?
Well, that's not the news. That was news that came out, I mean, a couple months ago, I think it was. Seth Rogen is producing or directing or has some involvement. I don't even know. It's an animated movie, but there hasn't been a lot out on it. But then today, an interview with him was released, and he described what he thinks is going to be different about his Ninja Turtles movie. And I'll just go ahead and read you guys the quote here. As a lifelong fan of Ninja Turtles, is that what his laugh sounds like? I can't remember. Something like that.
Okay. That was intense.
Okay. Weirdly, the teenage part of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was always the part that stuck out to me the most. And as someone who loves teenage movies and has made a lot of teenage movies and who literally got their start in their entire profession by writing a teenage movie, the idea of kind of honing in on that element was really exciting to us. I mean, not disregarding the rest, but really using that as kind of a jumping off point for the film. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, aren't they always portrayed in that way?
I don't think that's how he necessarily, I think he means it like that's going to be the lead, like that's the, not the fact that they're turtles or ninjas.
So it's going to be a coming of age story.
That's what it sounds like. But I mean, this is, think of the movies that are coming of age stories that this particular person has done.
I mean, this is obviously going to have to be different.
I mean, is it? Because we'll see. I don't know. I'm not convinced.
I don't know. I don't really know what to take away from that, Ray. You've got a face.
Oh, well, yeah.
She always has a face, technically.
I have always had a face. Oh, I don't know. I am not a fan of Seth Rogen's writing or his directing, you know. So I'm not really looking forward to that. A new Ninja Turtles would be a lot of fun for me, and I would give it a chance because it's a property that I really love. But, you know, his stoner comedy and misogynistic comedy, it's just not for me.
That's fair. I mean, I definitely worry, you know, I enjoy some of his movies. But I don't know that they necessarily suit the tone to Ninja Turtles, and I'm not sure how they can adapt that because most of his comedy is based off of sexual situations, drug usage, things like that, which might work for other teenage movies that are rated R or whatever, but I don't think they're going to get away with a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that's full of you know, boob jokes and pot.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, they were making like erection jokes in the Michael Bay ones.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I mean, they were, and those were not like super critically acclaimed either. It's.
Yeah. I'm worried things just go downhill instead of right. up instead.
Fair enough.
I mean, at least he won't do worse in terms of designing the design of the turtles. They can't be any worse than what we got. So
I've learned never to say that.
I'm saying that if they want to take that as a challenge, then I mean, that's fine. As a Turtles fan, if they made something worse than the way the Nightmare Faces looked, then I'd be happy to add a new worst to the list and make those the, you know, the mediocre Turtles.
Well,
I think right now TMNT 3 is the middle ground.
The concept art for the Michael Bay ones, originally they were supposed to be aliens, not turtles.
I remember.
Right?
I raged about that. I had several Facebook rants about that.
And the concept art I thought was maybe even worse than what we ended up getting. Maybe.
It was pretty off the wall.
Yeah. But anyway. So speaking of other kind of like casting kind of things, Craig Robinson is going to star in a new comedy series he's also producing from the creators of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's going to be called Killing It, and it's going to be from Dan Gore, who is on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, as well as Luke Del Tredici.
Closest I got. If you know how to pronounce these things, please correct us. We don't like mispronouncing names.
So Michael Schur is not involved. Michael Schur, of course, is behind Parks and Rec and The Good Place. But Dan Gore has done quite a bit. He also wrote on Parks and Rec. And so I like Craig Robinson a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The basis of the film is that he explores class. The show explores class, capitalism, and one man's quest to achieve the American dream, and also about hunting really big snakes. So I don't know exactly what that's gonna be like, but it is a thing that will be happening. So it's gonna be for Peacock. So there you go.
I like him as an actor. I'm just not sure that he's a leading man, but I guess we'll find out.
Mm-hmm. Ray, what do you think? Are you looking forward to it? Are you curious about it?
I adore Craig Robinson. He's incredibly talented. He can play the insane comedy role as well as the straight man, which we saw between his role on The Office as well as his role on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So I want to watch a sitcom from him. I'm hoping it does better than that Ghost Hunter show with him and Adam Scott. Is that was unpleasant to watch.
Fair enough. Do we have any more news that you guys want to cover? I have one more piece I want to talk about, but it's more of a downer, so I didn't want to.
You should have thought about that earlier, Derek.
So Wilford Brimley passed away this week. He was 85. He had a massive career, but from our audiences probably knew him from either Cocoon or The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing. But he was in just a lot of stuff. He had kidney issues. So this appears to not be COVID related, but we thought it was worth mentioning that he passed away this past week. He'd been sick for a couple of months, so that's obviously sad. But
he was also the face of diabetes.
That is true. Yeah,
more people know him than either of the movies you mentioned.
He was also the face of Quaker Oats,
which I don't think I ever knew prior to his death, because a lot of the articles are pointing that out, but I don't think I knew that. So then I think that's it for news. We've been talking about maybe doing some different types of segments on the show and stuff. So I thought we would talk about what we've been watching recently, and if anybody had anything they wanted to throw out and recommend to our listeners.
First of all, it's not it for news. I want to talk about Ray Park being a dick face.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's huge. So he posted a video on his Instagram of his wife going down on him, and
not him.
It wasn't him.
Allegedly, no. Not him. Allegedly, it was the person she was cheating with.
Right.
Got it. Okay. I apologize for that. My mistake. And we found out from our friend Ian, who is on the Star Wars podcast, Echo Station. And it went down pretty fast because, you know, you can't really have that on Instagram. But then, like, his child comes out and says it was on purpose and to humiliate his mother and or his wife. And then all this other stuff come out about how he's had a lot of alcohol issues and he's been abusive to them. And in the end, Disney has dropped him. So even though, like, just recently they announced a Darth Maul show with Kira, they said they're moving forward without him.
So I will say that those are reports. Disney has not publicly said anything.
I doubt they're going to publicly say something. I bet you anything they just cast somebody else.
Possible. I just want to be clear that at this moment, we don't know for certainty that Disney is going with somebody else, but right. I think we can assume that it's likely.
It's a little disappointing. He was an actor that I looked up to for a long time. He was, you know, there's not a lot of guys that are legitimate martial artists in Hollywood that do, you know, their own stunts and are just somebody that you can look up to. And if you ever watch videos of him interacting with fans at conventions and things like that, he seemed like just a wonderful person. So to hear these kind of things are heartbreaking. And, you know, my thoughts and feelings go out to the family and the people that are affected by this and by his behavior. His wife is, you know, cheating is a bad deal, but revenge porn is a much, much worse deal.
Well, I mean, cheating is a moral situation, whereas revenge porn is now, like, completely illegal.
Right.
So,
in any case, it's just a shitty thing to do. For, you know, you have to be a pretty big piece of crap to do that. Yeah. So, you know, it's disappointing, and you know, knowing that somebody you looked up to was kind of a piece of shit. And so, yeah, I mean, as my thoughts are with the people that are affected by this.
Yeah, I echo all of that. I don't really have anything else to add.
Same here. Just crazy. So we've been watching Harley Quinn.
Nice pivot.
Thank you. Yeah, so Harley Quinn dropped on HBO Max. We got rid of DC Universe a little while ago. We did, yes.
Finally cut the cord on DCU?
We've gone over this a couple of times. We have not had DCU since, like, December.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought you still had, like, the year subscription was still running or whatever.
Nope.
Okay.
No, we never actually renewed it. We went month to month to finish off Titans Season 2.
And that was the end.
And then that was it.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think we signed up for 1 month, I think in April, just to watch the first season of Harlequin.
I think so. We benched it all.
Or was that that would have been last year. That was last year.
Yeah.
When did we watch it? I don't remember. Doesn't matter.
It wasn't this year. It was last year for sure.
my dates.
Anyway, season two lives up to season one. I'm having a lot of fun watching the show. Very good writing. The characters are fleshed out and they're moving forward in a logical way, so I'm really hoping that it gets a season three.
Yeah, I mean, it's wonderful. It's one of those things that I wish the seasons were longer, but they're also so tight that there's no fluff. It's all just great. It's so meta and it's just very self-aware, and I really enjoy all of it. The versions of these characters are so fun. The more you know DC, I think the more you can enjoy what they're doing on this show. But it looks great. The actors are great. It's, yeah, please give me another season.
I'm interested in watching it, and I'm not a Harley Quinn fan, just based on the things that I've heard about it online and what you guys have said. So that says something, I imagine. And from everything I've heard, makes it sound like it's kind of like the way Teen Titans Go gets its humor, but, like, in an adult format. So yeah. That makes me excited for it. So the way, like, characters are portrayed and things like that is really, like, ridiculous versions of their comic book characters. So yeah, I'm definitely interested in checking it out.
It's completely self-aware, and they hire voice actors that fit the characters, but that you're also not expecting. Like, Ron Funches being the voice of King Shark gets me every time. You know, you figured he'd have this like huge deep voice and he doesn't, and it's still really wonderful.
Spoiler alert.
Jeez. How?
Now I can't be surprised by that.
It's all on IMDb. Like,
I didn't King Shark and Bane are probably my two favorite characters in the show right now, because mm-hmm. I love them. They're great. And I will say the show is definitely for adults. It is very violent. Lots of foul language too. It's not a kid's cartoon, just to be clear on that, but it's great. I will say, if I had any constructive criticism, it's that the frickin' end credit sequence needs to slow down. It moves so fast I can never actually read any of it.
And they bring in like fun side characters with famous voice actors almost every episode. So I really wish they would just chill so I didn't have to look that up. I could just read it when it's on screen.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Ryan? You watching anything worth talking about?
Well, I just finished Umbrella Academy season 2.
Oh, damn.
I really, really burned through it real quick. I'm by my house, I'm by myself in my house for 2 weeks. So I'm trying not to be lonely, but I'm filling that void with TV shows.
Of course.
And Umbrella Academy season 2 just happened to drop. Did you guys watch all of season 1 or no? Any of season 1?
I have watched part of season 1.
Oh, this is the thing that's a sensitive subject between the two of you.
It's not a sensitive
subject. It's a sensitive subject, everybody. There was a misunderstanding. Anyway, if you want, you can at me on Twitter and I'll give you the details. But it's a little weird. So if you don't know the Umbrella Academy story, like the whole, all of season 1 is trying to prevent an apocalypse that's supposed to happen at a certain time, and one of them is a time traveler, so he knows the time and they're trying to stop it. So season 2, you think they would do something different, but really it's just another apocalypse that's followed him to a different time period. So that was probably the weakest part of the storytelling. I hope that if they do a season 3, that it's not the apocalypse of the season again, because that's going to get really old. But the acting is great. The characters are much more fleshed out now than they were in season 1. It's much more character driven and less action driven, which is something like this with Doom Patrol. It's something I really enjoy also, getting more character. The actor that plays number 5 would be an amazing Damian Wayne. I've decided if they ever cast Damian Wayne, he would be so good. He's like a 58-year-old, like he's supposed to be 58 years old, but he looks like a 15-year-old because of time travel shenanigans. He has a snarky attitude down. I think he would be great as that. But the soundtrack is amazing. I've talked to you guys a little bit about it, but it is really incredible. One of my favorite TV show soundtracks, period. There is a playlist down on Spotify with all the songs from it, so if anybody's interested, it doesn't have spoilers or anything in it. So if you're worried about that, it's just good music. In particular, there's a really good Billie Eilish cover in there. A cover of one of her songs. Sorry, Bad Guy.
And it's an Amazon Prime show.
No, it's a Netflix
show. It's a Netflix show. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
The Boys is Amazon Prime.
Right. Sorry.
That's not till next month.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry. Too many services.
Yep.
We all watched Palm Springs.
Yes.
Right? We all saw that. So that's the Hulu movie starring Andy Samberg.
I only watched it because of you guys, by the way. It was not even on my radar. I hadn't even heard of it. So.
Oh, okay.
You should be proud of yourselves.
Yeah, so it stars Andy Samberg and then the mom from How I Met Your Mother. I'm drawing a blank on her name. I can't believe I'm doing this. Christina Milotti.
There you go. And it's Kristen.
Kristen Milotti, I apologize. And it's kind of like a slightly different take on the Groundhog Day time loop kind of concept, except being a good person isn't what gets you out of the loop, you know, kind of thing. So no, you know, no in-depth details or anything, but what'd you guys think?
It was a lot of fun. The time loop has become like a small genre of itself, but no matter what you do, it always gets compared to Groundhog Day. And I thought this one did a good enough job to stand apart from it. It's not, you know, ethical or metaphysical. There's no existential conversations about it. It's just a really good romantic comedy.
Yeah, I think I would have been disappointed if I went to the theater and paid $15 to see it, but on a streaming service, it was, I mean, it was good for a streaming service movie. And, you know, I think all of us like Andy Samberg. And oh, yeah. I didn't really know any of the other actors except for the obvious, J.K. Simmons. But
the legend.
Yeah. But it was enjoyable. Yeah. I mean, I didn't feel like it was 2 hours of my life wasted or anything. It was a little, the way the time loop is broken, I thought was a little stupid, but if that's a spoiler, I don't know, the fact that they broke the time loop at some point, but I mean, it was fine. All the actors were good. It was enjoyable. So I appreciate the recommendation.
Yeah, it was definitely cute. If you have Hulu, I think it's worth checking it out, especially since there's so few new movies. I think it's definitely worth watching if you've already got Hulu. I will say, you know, not giving anything away, but I think it should have ended like a scene earlier. I think that would have been a much stronger ending than what we got. But, you know, the three of us can talk about that if we want to offline. But, you know, good.
Stay tuned for our full Palm Springs spoiler review.
Our spoiler cast. It was cute, though. I liked them both. I thought they were good together. I thought they had chemistry and played off each other well. And I don't know how she doesn't get more work. I like her a lot. So hopefully this gets her a little more noticed, maybe. Anything else you guys want to talk about before we take our break?
Nope.
All right. Well, then we're going to take a short break, and when we get back, we will be discussing 1995's Judge Dredd movie. All right, and we are back. We are back to talk Judge Dredd. Its 25th anniversary was this summer. It was actually over the end of June. June 30th is when it came out in 1995. Little information on it. Budget of about $85 million, brought in $113.5 million worldwide, which is not a bomb or failure necessarily, but it is less than what Demolition Man, which we reviewed a little while back, brought in at almost $160 2 years earlier. And there's a lot of stylistic similarities between the two.
It's also significantly more than what the Dredd movie that came out much later. It did much better than that movie as well.
That is true. That's a very fair point.
It was like
point.
$49 million budget and $46 million and take, you know, gross, if I remember right, for the original or for the remake Dredd.
So. Yes, I was going to pull that up. Yeah, so that's Carl Urban's Judge Dredd.
Correct. It's just Dredd, yeah.
Which came out in 2012. It made $41.4 million worldwide, which barely beats just the domestic run of Stallone's Judge Dredd. That movie had a $45 million budget, though, so half the budget, you know, in 2012, to be fair. So the scope of that film is obviously a lot smaller. It's kind of hard to compare the two films a whole lot just because the stories are so wildly different from each other. So the film stars Sylvester Stallone. You would also know that because his name is basically the size of the title on any of the marketing materials. Rob Schneider shows up. This is our third Rob Schneider film of this 2020, which is
it's truly a year of an apocalypse.
It's funny because I don't think that in our previous episodes he shows up once.
No, we have never talked Rob Schneider before.
Is it my fault because I started it with Surf Ninjas,
you
right?
Did,
and then
yeah.
I went to Demolition Man and then this, yeah.
So it is
you
funny.
Can blame like, me.
We had over 200 episodes without Rob Schneider, and then in the last 14, we see him three times.
I asked you in person, I'm going to ask on the podcast, was it a requirement for Rob Schneider to be in every 90s Stallone movie?
So here's what happened. This role was supposed to go to Joe Pesci.
What the fuck?
And he turned it down. So Stallone straight up on his own went to Rob Schneider and asked him to be in the movie because of their time together on Demolition Man.
They made the right decision with Rob Schneider, I think. Joe Pesci would have been a much, much different character, not necessarily a better one.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to picture him in that role. And it's hard to know really what what Pesci said no to, because the movie, the script that he was given would have been completely different from what the movie ends up being. Because there was a lot of behind the scenes stuff here. So, you know, spoilers and all that for a 25-year-old film. But while it is technically based on the comic book of the same name, there's very little in here that is Dredd. You know, there's some stylistic stuff as far as like the way he looks that is obviously from the comics, but Stallone and Danny Cannon, who directed this, did not see eye to eye, like, at all in this movie. Danny wanted it to be closer to the comics, grittier, darker, you know, a more serious kind of thing, where Stallone thought it was supposed to be an action comedy and continued to push the film in that direction. And I think it's pretty clear that Stallone got his way more often than not, as far as story points and things of that nature. It's hard, right? Because so the character of Rico, who is played by Armando Sante, was supposed to be Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken turned down the role. So imagine this movie now. Stallone was always the guy, but now you've got Christopher Walken and Joe Pesci. That's a pretty different movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ryan, you've seen this before mm-hmm. this week, right? Okay. And Ray, you had never seen it.
Yes.
Okay.
It was a better time.
Ryan, when was the last time you had seen it?
Probably 1995. Or shortly thereafter, 96, maybe.
Sure. Okay. So
I thought I was done with it forever.
I'm going to ask you each a question. Ryan, was it better or worse than you remembered?
I remembered it being pretty bad. I'd say probably about the same, maybe worse now because I'm a critic as a secondary hobby. So that, you know, a lot more stuff stood out to me as an adult, specific things, but I think I enjoyed it equally as much, which is to say not at all.
Oh, okay.
Or very little.
Okay.
How about that? There were redeeming things, but they were few and far between.
Okay. Ray, first thoughts, first impressions as the only one on here who really has a fresh set of eyes on it.
Okay, so first and foremost, I noticed in the credits that Gianni Versace designed the specific Dredd uniform, and the costumes throughout the whole thing were impressive as hell. Like, I got, since my hobby is, you know, critiquing, but also costume making, I was impressed that, like, every stitch was beautiful. The movie is not good. No, it's not. It's not a good film. However, I can see where people get their enjoyment from it. It's not for me. It's really not. Like, it's not even one of those, like, this is so bad, it's great, like Demolition Man was for me. But
So to go back and address Rachel's first points about the costumes, the only thing impressive about the costumes for me was, like, the shoulder pieces. Literally everything else was like a V-neck and like spandex pants, other than like maybe some knee pads and like arm pads.
You don't like the helmets?
It's fine, but it just didn't suit the rest of the aesthetic. You know what I mean? These guys are supposed to, like, he goes through all their equipment and he's like, your bulletproof armor is going to keep you safe on the streets. And it's like, your bulletproof armor covers like your nipples and above, but not the center section where your heart is. Right? That would be too much. So everything else is just spandex. So and right in like one of the first scenes, a judge gets shot right through the chest and dies. So, I mean, it just doesn't, this is one of those parts where it's easy for me to compare the 2012 Dredd to this one, because that one, they at least had, like, it looked like armor, right? Like, I could believe that this would stop a bullet. If Stallone's shoulder gets shot, then I think he'll be good to go. But other than that, and I thought the helmets were pretty weak sauce too. they were more like 80s helmets than 90s helmets.
You think so?
If that makes any sense. Like stylistically, they felt more like an 80s costume. Actually, now that I think about it, most of the costume felt more like an 80s costume than a 90s costume to me.
I wonder if that's
not necessarily a bad thing, except for the fact that the movie came out in 95, right? If it came out earlier, then that would probably be more impressive to me. But I was not impressed with most of the costumes, unfortunately.
I wonder if any of the datedness to it is because like they had planned to make this movie back in the 80s with Harrison Ford, and it just never got off the ground. A lot of people blame RoboCop. I'm not sure that I buy that, but maybe these were design choices that were made long ago by the studio. I don't know.
It's possible.
I mean, I don't know. Just a possible. Yeah. I guess another interesting thing of note that I think kind of falls in line with some of what Ray was saying, the score is done by Alan Silvestri, who's done some of the most iconic scores that people know, most notably Back to the Future. And I've seen this movie a lot. I can't ever remember the score to this film. And that says a lot, I think, that it just gets completely faded into the background, that he couldn't even put together something really memorable to fill in the film. He wasn't the first choice. He wasn't even the second choice to do this, which is also kind of surprising, given his notoriety. But there you have it.
I think to that point, that's a lot of the problem with the film, right? Is that, you know, you get these big names, but nothing from it is really memorable. You know, Sylvester Stallone, I know you love him, Derek, and I love him for a lot of things too, and maybe not as much as you, but he was awkward in this movie. His acting was bad, like straight up. It was not good. I don't know if you guys agree with me on that, but a lot of Rotten Tomatoes did, because I went and looked at it after I watched this movie to make sure I wasn't alone. And some of it was probably the writing, but like his acting was very poor. In fact, acting from most people in this movie was very poor. The only person for me that stood out as a good performance was the villain, Rico.
Asante.
Yeah, I think he was great. He killed it. He was sufficiently crazy to where, you know, as a villain, he was believable and somewhat relatable. Not as good as Killmonger, but along the same lines, right? Like he's trying to be family with his brother, and you know, it's an evil way of doing it, but you know, he's the only family that he has, you find out. And you know, I don't know, he was the best part of the movie for me in terms of acting. But yeah, I thought Stallone was real bad, and Rob Schneider, he wasn't bad, but he was just very Rob Schneider, and it seemed out of place in this movie. You know, it was 100% Rob Schneider. It should have been dialed down a little bit.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely with you there. And I mean, Rotten Tomatoes, just for people who may not know, the critic tomato meter is 19% and the audience score is 30%, which keeps those pretty in line with each other.
Yeah, this is not really good from either one.
No. And I honestly think that, I think the tone is all over the place with this movie. And I think that's part of the problem, because again, Stallone was trying to make an action comedy, right? But they were also, trying to make a serious, heavy action film. And I think they cut it to be more of a serious action film. But Stallone's not playing it that way. And so it just never gels quite right. And, it's hard to do. Like, Stallone wanted to be the stoic, quiet, non-emotional guy, right? And it's hard to carry a movie that way unless you're like a really good actor. And I love Stallone. I do. And his original Rocky, the very first film, I think is outstanding, and he does an amazing job. And he's done some great stuff in his more serious roles that you don't see very often. But this is just not the right way to carry this kind of film. And I mean, they had talked about having Schwarzenegger do it. Maybe he would have been better. I don't know. Ray, what do you think?
About which part?
Any of Schwarzenegger any and some of the acting and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Or Schwarzenegger, Stallone.
So I gotta say, the brother thing really bothers me. Like, why are they so obsessed with being brothers all of a sudden when, you know, Stallone found out about him 30 seconds prior and he's like, oh my God, I have a brother? Like, no, you don't. You have a genetic clone. Like, you have, like, that's not what a brother is exactly. But okay, let's go with this now. So all of a sudden I'm supposed to feel sympathetic for these two very flawed characters and it, like give two shits. I think they could have done better if that's the angle they wanted to go with.
I never feel sympathetic for Rico ever.
I'm guessing there's another version of this film where the brother angle is, I think it would have been more successful if they had played up the family brother thing like from the very beginning.
If they would have shown, even in like an opening montage kind of thing, how close those two were in the academy, I would have felt really bad and had more sympathy for what actually happened to both of them. But that's not the case. That's not what happens. Like, he says that he had to judge his only friend, and I don't care. And maybe that's like because he doesn't have any emotions or anything, but it just wasn't played well. It wasn't played for the emotion they were trying to get.
Yeah, I think to that, that's a big problem I have with this movie too, is that it's like they told Stallone, okay, I just need you to act like RoboCop once he's like the RoboCop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't be emotional, nothing. And when you're trying to have a hero in a movie, there has to be some connection, right, with the audience, or else it won't resonate. If he's completely not human, no emotions, you know, doesn't feel anything, there's no connection there. And I didn't give a shit about anything that happened to him because he might as well not even be human. Right. I mean, it's funny because whenever he takes his helmet off and like, there's a really big focus on his eyes. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but like his eyes were very prominent and he always looked like he was about to cry. Well, I mean, his eyes were just very wet.
I think it was the contacts.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the contacts. The contacts were so distracting. And they put him in Rico 2, and they just weren't. First of all, like, it was the early 90s. Costume contacts were thick pieces of plastic with ink on them. And they haven't really improved, but at least now doctors are involved in creating them. So they're a bit better. But like they probably destroyed their vision and their corneas for a few weeks, to be completely honest. Like there's no way they could have acted normally through those, which I think is why they were completely like yelling and shouting a lot of the times with their lines to distract you from the fact that they're on the verge of tears.
Yeah, that's fair. And to some of the points that you guys are making about like the brother relationship. I think this is just a short movie. It's only 96 minutes, the whole thing. And, you know, if they had spent another 20 minutes, 15 minutes, 10 minutes with some type of background showing, like you said, Ray, with like some flashbacks or a montage or something, would have helped a huge deal. Because,
but all we have is that picture of them holding hands, and who cares about that? Like, how many times have you guys had to shake hands with somebody that you don't know or you're not a huge fan of or something? Like,
I can't remember the last time I shook hands now because of COVID. So
right, of course.
No, I mean, like, I understood what they were going for, but I just think there's no punch behind it because there's just nothing on screen. We don't know these characters. Most people who saw the movie didn't know these characters, so there's no reason to feel invested. And they needed more of that. I think if this movie had been 2 hours, I think it might have been a lot better. Yeah. Everything's very rushed, you know. A lot of times having like that opening narration that has to explain the world in text format isn't a great way to do it. I know Star Wars is very famous for it, and maybe they're the exception to the rule.
At least they had the best narrator for it.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
You know, if you need a narrator, boom, the best one.
Yeah. But like the long walk is just kind of glossed over. It's not really talked about in any level of detail that makes sense. You know, like it's literally just send the old man out with a gun and a book and that's it. No supplies, no food. Like they're going to be dead in a week, maybe less.
I think that's a huge problem that I have with the movie as well, because at no point do I believe that Dredd is in any kind of danger. Like when he's convicted, nope, he's fine. He'll get back. when
the guy has a knife on the plane, it's like, oh yeah, I'm sure he's gonna just stab him in the neck. But no, he like does this thing where he's like, hey, I'm gonna get back at you, Dredd, and then a plane crash happens. Yeah, it's
he's captured by cannibals, and then like it just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And I think that's the difference between, that's the biggest difference I noticed between the old Dredd and the new Dredd. The new Dredd is very much like Carl Urban, you know, could die at any point because this is some serious stuff. So, and you don't believe that when you see this Dredd. And maybe that's just because at that point, Stallone was huge and he had in his contract certain amount of close-ups that he required, and he had the whether or not he could win or lose a fight, and so maybe that that just wasn't a thing.
I don't know. I mean, I would have believed that Carl Urban's Dredd, you know, would could die later in the film, but in the first half hour, I'm not thinking the hero of the movie is gonna die in either film.
Right, that's fair. Know,
I mean, I think that's just unfortunately the nature of the movie, right? The movie is called Judge Dredd. You're not going to kill him off in the first act, but but I agree with you though. Like, it's got the same problem that World War Z has, where there's a plane crash and the only person, in this case two people, to survive are the main characters. Nobody else survives except, well, I guess the pilot survives and they shoot the pilot. I'm sorry.
Dredd, this version for me felt like Sylvester Stallone just wanted to like watch it and masturbate to how cool he was the whole time, because it was like when he was super stoic, he did the coolest shit, right? Like cool action movie stuff, and then had a cheesy shitty line after every single thing he did. I swear half of his dialogue was just crappy one-liners, like really bad ones. He had so many because they were hoping one would catch on, like one of Arnold's.
I mean, I think that that's a fair.
It was so distracting. It's like, what stupid cheesy line is he going to say after the next thing? And now that you brought up that they wanted two different movies, Derek, it definitely feels like the editor was making a different movie and the director were making a different movie than what Sylvester Stallone was making.
Well, it's even worse than that, because so Danny Cannon was not allowed on set during reshoots. So somebody else took care of all of the reshoots.
They Joss Whedoned it.
You know, and I mean, I don't know what percentage of the film is reshoots. I have no idea, right? But like, this movie is just marred with very cliche studio problems, you know? And I think that it's kind of miraculous that it came together as well as it ended up coming together, given all the behind the scenes stuff. But it's pretty bad. I mean, I feel like everybody was making a different movie at the same time,
and it's just disappointing too, because you know, one of the biggest things that disappointed me about this movie, watching it as an adult and having seen the movies that have come out since, it has, was that there was the skeleton there for a really cool sci-fi movie. I mean, a lot of the stuff, the world building and things like that, felt very much like Fifth Element to me, which is one of my favorite world building movies.
I agree with that,
even though it did never get a sequel. But a lot of the stuff felt like they had the ability to make a really cool world and something that you really cared about, things that happened in it. All the skeleton was there, but then everything you got was just crap inside of it. And like the practical effects, and maybe that's where some of it comes from, is that the practical effects in this movie are really, really good. In the Fifth Element's practical effects are really, really good. And so I think that lends itself to world building. This felt like Blade Runner level practical effects almost, and world building. It was not as well executed as Blade Runner, obviously, but like the robot that the dude has, it was really great.
So good.
You know, and the stuff with the cannibal robot guy with the knob on his head, that was all really cool. Like, he looked really good. Like, if that came out today, I would be like, okay, they did a great job with that. You know, the seams were not, there weren't seams everywhere, and like, it didn't look like a bad movie. The budget was really big, and you could tell, it showed, you know, it wasn't like an all cocaine budget. It was like, they actually used it for the movie. So that was the disappointment for me. It's just that everything was there to do a really, really cool movie, and they missed the mark.
So I was going to bring up the practical effects, because I was curious if you felt that way. Because, yeah, I think that a lot of it still holds up pretty well. The robot in particular is great. And originally they wanted a guy in a suit, and Danny pushed for them to have it actually be a hydraulic robot. Took five people to control, and I think that it shows. I think that you can watch that now and it still looks good.
My only problem with the robot is, like, if he didn't have guns, he would not be scary at all, because he moves so slow. Yeah, and like when an arm swings, you have 10 minutes to get out of the way. But it is, like, the way it moves and everything is really cool. So yeah, I mean,
and mean the cyborg guy, I mean, I always thought looked creepy as hell, and I think that it still looks creepy as hell.
I loved his spine and everything. It all looked really cool,
and where the metal meets the skin, I just think it looks really professional. It looks really solid. It's kind of slimy and shiny, you know, the skin's like kind of gross, and it's just it meets up with the metal well. It just, yeah, I think that still holds up. Some of the vehicles are cool. They're not as good as Blade Runner, but I think they're a good attempt at making practical vehicles. Some of the matte paintings type things I still think look decent. They're not amazing for 1995, but trying to get the scope of such a large city is not an easy undertaking. You know, it's supposed to be like, what are they, how many million? 65 million people, I think they said.
Per city, yeah.
Part of the reason, or part of the thing I liked about the world building, is they did a really good job of showing the overpopulation and, you know, these riots that are happening. And there was another term for them too, but
civil unrest.
No, it was something in the movie. It was like block something, or I can't remember what it was, but they did a really good job of showing what happens, you know, when you get so many people in such a small space. And yeah, and that they just didn't have the police force to deal with it. So that part of the world building was really good. And again, that's why I'm so disappointed in what it could have been. Because that could have been like the Fifth Element, but 5 years earlier, which for all of us, despite the problems with the director and everything, that's one of the best sci-fi movies to come out of the 90s for sure. Maybe the best sci-fi movie to come out of the 90s. Uh-huh. And, you know, it's one of the best ever.
Yeah.
So.
No, I'm totally with you there.
Did anybody else think that it would be that the whole like plot would have been resolved a lot easier if they had just not, like, or if they just had like the gun thing on every gun instead of just the lawgivers?
Yep.
Like, you know, all the times when somebody just picks up another random rifle and starts shooting people with it, all that would be done. There would be none of that. The whole movie would have been 20 minutes long if they just put that technology on everything.
I mean, there's some big story issues.
Yeah.
Right. First and foremost is the fact that Rico is alive, and somehow enough people notice to give him a Magneto style prison, but also not enough people notice for anybody to bring up that it was a possibility that he was involved.
What were the triggers on those auto turrets? Right. Like, what had to happen for the auto turrets to shoot somebody?
So I have a theory. And it's very loose because I don't think it holds up well.
But so just to be clear, there was nothing in the movie that would signify that there's any kind of good parameters for these auto turrets.
There's the voice print. I think it only recognizes certain voices. And since it didn't, when he got shot in the throat, it didn't sound like him anymore. And it didn't sound like Rico. The guns assumed it was a third intruder.
So the auto turrets really are only good if somebody doesn't break your voice box. Is they're not meant to like automatically start shooting somebody if a prisoner starts shooting, you know, or attacks somebody.
I'm sure if Rico walked too far outside of his little sphere, his little cylinder, they would fire.
But that's, they did assumption. He did walk out of that and they didn't shoot.
Yeah, he went under the bridge. Yeah, yeah. That's where it falls apart. Yeah.
I don't know, there's a lot of huge plot holes like that, and it's whatever. I could have forgiven those if it was a better movie.
I just don't understand how you can hide the existence of this type of person when he requires such a unique cell.
And probably a lot of money to maintain that kind of security. And I mean, there was like three judges outside the door.
Ray, what about you? Are there any big plot holes that you specifically don't care for?
I don't think so, actually, because it's a weird Odyssey kind of film, and none of it really makes sense together. Like, for me, the Cursed Earth part felt like a completely different movie than the White Walker clone things at the end. And like the chase scene felt different than even the beginning. My biggest thing is that like a movie that has so many different parts like that can be connected with better acting. And the best actor in this film for me was Diane Lane.
She was good, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I truly appreciate that she was not overly sexualized at any point. They easily could have done that with her.
But why did they have to make her a love interest? Like,
I didn't think that was really necessary. And I am a sucker for a good romance story in any kind of film, but this wasn't good.
But who would be attracted to Dredd? Or to, you know what I mean? Like, other than physically.
I actually think, and maybe I'll get hate for this because it's an action movie, whatever. I actually think that Stallone and Schneider had better romantic chemistry throughout the film. I know that's silly, but it's true. Like,
you're not wrong.
Like, Schneider's a total damsel, and Stallone keeps saving him throughout the whole thing. Like, by the end, just kiss already. Like,
I would have been way more okay with that ending than the forced kiss that we got.
It was a bit forced, and I don't usually think that. Like, I'm not the person who's like, oh, the romance was forced. No, this was forced. She was a really good judge, and she had been learning from Dredd and following him, and now all of a sudden she's just the love interest when, you know, she had been kicking a lot of ass and had saved his ass a few times. So that was pretty impressive.
That fight scene was really bad, by the way, between her and the other chick.
Yes, oh yes, it was.
I mean, so the one horrible between Dredd and Rico is not much better.
Okay, yeah. I mean, the Demolition Man fight was way better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, Wesley Snipes is an actual martial artist, so, you know, yeah, they have that advantage. But
speaking of like the love interest and things like that, there's a point that this movie attempts to make for like a minute and a half and then completely forgets about it. And that's this idea that the law doesn't always get it right. Right? That's Rob Schneider's entire character is there to be along this entire time saying that it can't be this inflexible. It has to take situations into context. You can't just be a machine, right?
And Hershey's character, you know, Diane Lane, she was like, aren't there extenuating circumstances? Which exactly. I completely appreciated.
So you take your pinnacle judge, right? And you show to him that it can be wrong. People can be framed. People can be taken out of context. People can be overpunished. Does he learn anything by the end of this movie? Is there any sense to you, the way he leaves at the end of the movie, that he's going to be any more lenient or understanding?
Nope.
The next time he comes across somebody?
Because he's RoboCop. He doesn't learn. He just continues doing his duty.
Dredd doesn't learn any lessons whatsoever. He's not a better person at the end. He's not a better judge. He's just back to being like the judge and potentially, you know, the senior member of the council.
Well, he's going to hook up with Hershey. I mean, that's
happen.
He declines being the senior member of the council. He does. So he's still no more of a character than he was at the beginning.
Well, and what's concerning there is like that's also very short-sighted on his part because he's the most senior person left. So who's going to take over the council now? People that are less experienced than him? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, he should at least be there in some capacity. And then you have Rob Schneider who got injured, you know, kind of saving the day. Is he going to finish out his 5 years in prison or is he getting pardoned? What do you think happens with Rob Schneider?
He goes on to be in another Stallone movie.
No, another Adam Sandler movie, probably.
That's where his career shifted. Yeah.
Is there one that has Sylvester Stallone, Adam Sandler, and Rob Schneider? Because that would probably be our next review.
Not to my knowledge.
We could start transitioning.
If that was going to happen, I think it would have been like The Longest Yard or something like
that.
That's
true. Yeah, probably would have been.
You know? But yeah, so like, I mean, everything's just kind of left. Like the movie just ends, right?
Yeah.
And you're basically, you have no idea what's going to happen with Schneider's character or the council. You assume Dredd has learned nothing. And so the next day, it's as if the movie basically never happened. And I think that's the, I think for me, that's the biggest problem, that this movie has pretty big consequences. The entire council is killed. Every single one of them is dead by the end of this movie. And this massive conspiracy has been torn wide open, showing all of this corruption and all of these issues with the way the law is enforced. And then end of movie, no, nothing changes.
Mm-hmm. That's no lessons learned, nothing.
That's nobody where the movie loses
me.
That's where the movie loses you?
Because otherwise, I just think of it as like, as candy. It's just, it's eye candy. It's fun props and fun action sequences. And, you know, I enjoyed it as a kid. And so it's just, it's a guilty pleasure for me.
I mean, I don't know. I'm glad that it worked for you, some of that stuff. But like, I don't want to see an action sequence where the star is completely infallible and that nothing challenges him.
Well, that's not true. He almost dies. Rico almost throws him off the Statue of Liberty. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. There was no question that he was going to, you know, he was going to die right there. We all thought.
But come on. I mean, but that's the same with any of like, that's the same with Demolition Man. Did you ever think he was going to not win?
Well, I mean, just by the nature of the hero, I'm saying that like he dispatches everything basically up until that Rico fight very easily. No challenge for him at all. And that's where it falls apart for me. And then if the Rico scene had been cooler, you know, then I would have been more okay with that, him having that challenge from his clone. But everybody else is just so bad, or he's so good that there's nothing challenging to him. And I don't want to see an action scene like that. And Jackie Chan, whenever he does an action scene in a lot of his movies, he gets his ass kicked, like, a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily need it to be like that, but I need to see that this person has some weakness of some kind. Right? They need to be a human.
Something that I think both Dread movies, at least for me, does that I don't care for is this idea that Dread is this amazing, iconic, mythological being, but we never really get to see the why. Like, they're already there.
See that in the 2012. Oh, you mean you don't get to see the lead up?
Yeah, like they're already at that point. And I don't know. It's harder for me to care. At that point, like, if you're already on that level, he's already the greatest ever, then yeah, these little peon stormtrooper guys are gonna get knocked away really easily, and I'm not really gonna care. And you know, he's gonna have to fight the big bad guy at some point. I mean, I think there it would have been cool if he fought the robot at some point. That could have been a cool scene, but they didn't go that route.
I think you are right, but I do think this 2012 movie did a better job at showing that he could be overpowered. You know, earlier on in the movie, it shows that this drug gives people an advantage over him. And yeah. that's an advantage that they have throughout the whole movie, because the whole, spoilers for Dread, I guess, but throughout the whole movie, they're in this one building mm-hmm. where that drug is being manufactured and sold. So a lot of people have that drug and they have an advantage over him. So, you know, that movie, I thought, handled it better. And this movie had nothing like that. I don't think we're debating which movie is better. Yeah. I think we would all agree. But that was a big part of the problem for me. And I think, you know, in Demolition Man, if you're making that comparison, his whole thing there was he wasn't the best at everything, because he's totally fish out of water in this world, right? So everything is new to him. He doesn't know everything. So I think there was some weakness shown there, which is good.
That's fair.
You know, there was the technology that he didn't know that was always going to be beating him. In this mm-hmm. movie, there was nothing. He knew everything about everything.
He's more humanized.
In Demolition Man, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Ray, what do you think?
Well, I was kind of thinking that the points of the two movies are completely different. You know, Demolition Man, he's supposed to be there to figure out a way to, you know, stop Snipes' character, but he's also there to bring some, you know, 20th century joy back to their life, like physical sex. So I don't think he needs to be fallible or infallible, because the point is that he's there to teach them a lesson about the past, and they're there to teach him about this new, more utopian future and how things can be peaceful. So it's all about each other, or learning from each other during a really fun action movie. Whereas this one, it makes no sense for him to go through all this stuff if he doesn't come out the other side at least a changed person. He doesn't necessarily have to be better, but changed. Otherwise, what's with all the trials that he has to go through?
Yeah. And the only thing that changes is he's like, yeah, I'll make out with somebody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In front of the whole group of judges there. It's apparently interdepartment romance is okay with judges.
As long as they're both judges. If he was on the council, then maybe he couldn't do it.
They're not allowed to retire normally and go back to normal life, but they are, you know, it's cool to just hook up with each other.
Totally different.
I do like the fact that in both Dread movies, the female co-star is capable in her own right. She's not like a damsel. Like you said, Rachel, if anything, Rob Schneider is the damsel in this movie. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's one thing I think that both movies did well. Diane Lane's character was completely capable, and she was shown to be very smart, basically a lawyer, you know, and I thought that was really great. So
yeah.
Female characters in the 90s did not get a lot of love, and so, you know, that was a nice surprise. If anything, she was significantly more interesting than Stallone's character. So,
yeah. I mean, speaking of the pacing, like that court scene is so freaking fast.
Yep.
I mean, you could have at least slowed that down a couple of minutes to make it seem more emotional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have like some witnesses, like some character witnesses.
But we already didn't care. Yeah, if you had character witnesses, that would help. But we already didn't care about him going into the trial. So make
me care about him then, you know, bring on like, you know, any partner he ever worked with or somebody that he saved or something, you know, to make me feel like he is a good person and not just the robot that we're all led to believe that he is. Right.
Yep. RoboCop.
You know, and like, that's the problem, right? Like this movie, a lot, like for better or worse, a lot happens in the movie in a very short time frame. Yep. And just very little of it is fleshed
out. And you're
out.
Supposed to care about a lot of it when there's no context to care about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
I care more for the cursed earth people who had to resort to cannibalism because there's literally nothing out there for them to eat.
Yeah, seeing a roasted body that they were going to eat.
I mean,
that was pretty dark. That right there is a big part of like where you can see the differences in the movies, because that's not a comedy thing. You don't show a person that's been like cooked like a roasted pig in a comedy. Yeah. I mean,
no, absolutely. But then that scene like visually is great. Like the set and everything is great, but there's a logistical problem, and it has to do with. So Schneider tries to, you know, pretend to be like one of them, right? So he can get away and everything. And Dredd tells him that was a mistake because his new friends are cannibals. Does that imply that because Stallone's not one of them, they're not going to eat him?
Yeah.
I think at that point, he just knew that his hands were going to be coming out of that binding and he was going to be able to take care of it. But I mean, I don't know. He said stupid shit the whole time, so
he just was biding time and he
right waited. Exactly.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. That
it's a bit of a reach, but
yeah. Fair enough. I mean, anything else? I think it's at least a better use of the Statue of Liberty than X-Men, but
not much.
Yeah.
I like right at the beginning, as soon as the like opening credits started, I was like, oh, this is gonna be bad, just because they wanted you to know it's a comic book movie so bad that like half of the opening credits are just Dread comics opening up, but the movie then is not based on the comics barely at all other than name. So you know, so if you have to go that far to show that this is a comic book movie, I mean, come on. It's like they were making excuses for this being a bad movie from the very beginning to set your expectations.
I mentioned it to Ray. I was like, I wonder if this is where Marvel got the idea for their little comic booky opening.
But that was like a 2-second thing, right? Like that was just their logo show.
It's still funny.
This is like a full thing. I don't know.
I think it's because a lot of people didn't know who Judge Dredd was.
But does it matter? Did that make you know who he is now?
Well, sort of, because this movie had a couple of things. So I was going to bring these up as like fun facts, but might as well just do it now. So this movie did two things that were kind of unique. First, it had specific tie-in comic books, which was not a common thing at the time. And so they wanted people to know that it was based on comics, so they would go buy the tie-in comics. And it was the first movie ever to release simultaneously with a video game based on it. So they were very heavy into like the tie-in marketing for the other stuff. Not saying that that was the right way to go, but that's the reasoning behind it, is they wanted people to see the movie, go buy the comics, go buy the video game.
Just like everything else in the 90s.
So, I mean, it kicked off what now is a pretty big, well, at least was a pretty big norm, where you'd have these movies and there'd be shitty video game adaptations of them. And now every comic book movie has comic book tie-ins. Star Trek has comic book tie-ins. I mean, that's just the norm now. But back then it was a more rare thing. Final thoughts, Ray.
Yes. I've said all I need to say. I don't really have any final thoughts, you know. I am not as eloquent as Jerry Springer at this time, so.
Wow. Nice, yeah. Jerry Springer reference.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's very rare that those things happen, so there you go. That's it. It was okay. A movie.
It was.
I feel like, yeah, I need to come up with something. I've watched terrible movies this year for both of you.
Hey, this is not the worst movie
Suburban Commando
that we've watched. Suburban Commando.
I mean,
once you watch that, then you can be mad at us. But until then,
I don't know. I've watched Howard the Duck, The Last Dragon, Surf Ninjas. Like,
are you telling me The Last Dragon was bad? I mean, Surf Ninjas, I can like forgive a little bit, but The Last Dragon. I mean, it has a pretty huge cult following.
So wait, I have a very important question for both of you. Which movie is better, Judge Dredd or Howard the Duck?
Oh my God. Guys, it's time to go.
I can't answer that.
I'm at Siren Ray.
Oh, come on. No, wait. Ryan, what are your final thoughts on Dredd? Judge Dredd, excuse me.
I'm glad I never have to watch it again, and I think I'm going to go watch the 2012 Dredd to cleanse my palate.
Fair enough. Did you, real quick, did either of you ever see the 2012 Dredd in 3D, or did you see it in 2D?
No, 2D. I actually didn't see it in theaters. Nobody did. That's why it didn't make any money.
Yeah. No, I was just curious. I only saw it in 2D as well, but apparently the 3D was supposed to be really good, and I did not see that.
Did they ever recently release a 3D like DVD of it, for a 3D Blu-ray?
I am not sure.
I would buy that for PlayStation VR if they offered it. That would be fucking cool.
It's a good thought. I'll have to check.
Yeah.
My final thoughts are that it's silly, ridiculous. The props are really good. I always thought the gun was neat as a concept. And I've considered cosplaying this a few times because I think it'd be easy enough to make. So, but you know, Brian's not happy about it. So.
Oh, I didn't realize you were into spandex that much.
Just for you.
I'm going to say that for my body type, I would not do this.
Oh, I'm not. No.
I would do
no.
the 2012 version because it's much more forgiving for a body type like mine.
I would have to lose a lot of weight before I'm putting myself in that. Listeners may not know this, but I don't really look a lot like Stallone.
I mean, I picture you when I just hear your voice as Stallone, basically. Similar jawline.
I knew you'd say that. All right. So that's going to be it for us. Next week, however, we are reviewing a great movie, one that I'm sure all three of us are excited to talk about. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, 10th anniversary review.
Have we not reviewed that before? I feel like we've talked about it on the show before.
The Alamo did a showing a while back. Maybe we just randomly talked about it a little bit.
I don't know. Well, I know we did an episode about music themed movie or musical themes in movies or something like that. Or best soundtracks or something. In that movie, we talked about a good amount during that one. So maybe that's what I'm thinking about.
Do you remember, Ray?
We have never officially done a full Scott Pilgrim episode before. But since it is one of all three of our favorite movies, it gets brought up a lot. And it's made a lot of our top lists in movies or in the podcast. So this is going to be a more dedicated podcast, obviously, but you pretty much get that we all love this film if you've listened to us.
Yeah, it's basically going to be a giant Scott Pilgrim circle jerk.
Yep.
And we'll talk
just as long as you're prepared for
Wright.
That.
Edgar, we'll talk about Edgar Wright. We'll talk about a lot of the cast because there's some like amazing people in this movie that is. It's always a fun reminder who's in this movie. So yeah, that's what we're doing next week. I'm really excited about that. So that'll be good. Ray, if people want to reach out to you, talk about Scott Pilgrim or how much they dislike Judge Dredd, how can they find you?
I'm at Siren Ray on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And Ryan, same.
If you want to talk to me about how much you hate Judge Dredd, I welcome it, please. And tag the Star Trek dude in it, too. You can find me at Buster Props.
And I am at the Star Trek dude. You can also find me on Gamer Heroes, which is the video game podcast here on the Heroes Podcast Network. And we actually, Ray and a recurring guest and friend of the network, Zach, is going to be joining me, or are they are going to be joining me starting next week back on Red Shirts and Runabouts, which is our Star Trek podcast. We will be reviewing Star Trek Lower Decks, which is the new animated Star Trek series coming to CBS All Access from the creator of Rick and Morty. So you can join us for that. We are, of course, Screen Heroes at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter. Please join our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/screenheroes. We're doing a big, massive, like 85 film sci-fi movie tournament. It's been really interesting so far in some of these lower brackets. It's going to take us a while. So join us, come vote for which sci-fi movie matchups you like. And you can talk to us about other cool movie things and watch our live streams Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central. And you can chat with us during the show. So thank you to those who did. We had a couple of people in chat. Thank you for that. We'll catch you guys next week.